From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of July 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. And if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, in the second part of the program, Commodity Week comes up. We'll talk with Jerry Gulke of the Gulke Group and Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting right here on Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo is here. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. It's warm, but not horrible here today. Looks like we're going to get warmer as we go through parts of the week. How about where you are?
Well, the high ground's starting to stress, Todd. We've missed a couple rains. We were blessed about a week ago. We got a couple 0.3 inch rains across the area. Some guys got a little bit more than that, but everybody's starting to get more concerned because we're shooting tassels. And wherever you had poorly planted crops or replanted crops, whether you're east of the Mississippi or west of the Mississippi, you realize that the really key game-changing yield determining time period is right here, right now. So nerves are getting a little bit more strained no matter who I'm talking to. Even guys in Ohio are pleading with no more rain at this point, saying that the bean crop is looking as bad as it did in 2015, where they had such wet feet over there, they had really poor yield. So there's a couple garden spots out there. You know, they're pretty sizable from what I can tell, but they're shrinking. And one thing that's really a benefit to us all is that it's not just about the United States, it's about the world as well. We've got China with issues, Europe with issues, and even Australia, their ag sector is talking about maybe their wheat crop falling below 20 million tons, which would be about a 40% drop from last year's record crop. So we've got a world crop issue on our hands. Yes, we have South American excess supplies, but we've also got some really key areas that are getting stressed right now.
Just about the opposite of what we were looking at last year when we had a whole lot of crop in lots of places in the northern hemisphere that was looking really good. Soybeans, you mentioned, they were the driving force for the day, managed to gain 15 to 16 cents. Why was that the case, and despite the fact that we have some tough areas in the United States, still an overabundance of supply, at least domestically?
And globally, but you're right. They really drove the bus this week. When you look at a week-to-week change and you go back about a week ago and think about the grain stocks and the acreage report and how that was those two reports were the launch pads for the beans to find short covering and take away the fears of people, including myself, that we're worried about an undervalue level of 835 or 840 in terms of November futures. That was probably the make or break time period to get the market to go higher. The USDA didn't disappoint the bull. And on the week, we were up almost 60 cents. And if you look more closely at it, you see that the wheat market actually was only up 6 cents on the week. You see that the spring wheat market had a substantial correction. Why? Because it rallied $2.44 in the month of June. And so, yes, it's under a technical corrective wave coming back from the July 4th holiday. But that translated into weaker wheat gains in the soft red and hard red. And that then translated into the corn weakness. Two other things, I think, is the crude oil is going to close down probably around 4% for the week. That is a big negative with some of the fears of what's happening at the G20 meeting, probably also making its way into the corn market through the wheat, through the crude oil. Natural gas is at an 18-week low today. This, even though we're heating up and finding a ridge of high pressure. So all these things, I think, work together. And probably the biggest feature that brought the beans to the forefront and kept the longs buying and selling corn were those crop conditions reports.
And how do you put this into your marketing plan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in a mindset of 2017 is a hedger's market. In other words, I'm not going to recommend buying into this market unless you want to do what I can recommend any year, and that is just buy lottery tickets like $5 Deese corn calls or something like that. I can't get too specific on the air because of our compliance, but something like a lottery ticket that has a very low probability of doing any good unless you have a 2012 or something like that repeat. I'm going to try and stay very focused on making for the client $600 an acre on the cash bean sales, $800 an acre on cash corn sales. And remember that as the market goes up and we are pricing in lower yield, we're also starting to ration demand. And if I can do those and meet those goals in 2017, then I'll feel a lot better about 2018, 2019, and 2020.
It's getting a lot easier to make $600 on soybeans at this point.
I was talking about that with a client today, and he said, well, what if I have 45 bushel yields? I said, you're right. You got to have $13 beans. But that's the whole goal, is get the discussion, get talking about what you need based upon what your yields are or what you're trying to determine your yields are at. But you're right. If you are still looking at 55, 60 bushel beans, and the technicals would suggest that we can get November beans up to around 1040 in this short-term move here if the weather maps stay right. I think that that's where you really got to start thinking about that again, because we are starting to see some competition in the corn from South America. The exports for June out of Brazil were about 30 times what they were last June because of their drought-stricken crop, but they're on it. Argentina is going to be rapidly, harvesting now that they're starting to dry out, and so we will have corn and bean competition, and we should be nervous about NAFTA. We should be nervous about the trade issues and whether the United States and China don't work well with each other regarding North Korea. We want to protect profit. That's all there is to it.
We're a bit more than a month away from the spring wheat harvest, or what would normally be spring wheat harvest time, may come a little bit earlier this year because of drought conditions in the Dakotas and Montana. Is there upside potential left in that market? And if so, will it drag the corn or other markets with it? You talked about a correction in this marketplace because it has been moving so sharply. Is there more left?
I'm inclined to think yes. One, because Canada is part of the problem in terms of production problems along with the United States. And Montana came out with 51% very poor conditions in spring wheat. South Dakota at 65%. Those crops probably aren't going to come back. And then you have what I talked about at the top of the show, and that is Australia, probably our biggest competitor in Asia when it comes to the wheat market. And you still have quite a bit of significant issues in Ukraine, France, Spain, and Italy. And so you have a high quality wheat issue brewing globally. So I'm inclined to say that the downside is probably limited. What's that mean? Well, a 38% correction could be a dollar or 95 cents because of this rally we've seen. So limited is in the eye of the beholder. But I do feel like that the upside potential, you can't put a top on it yet, Todd.
And will it take the grains or corn with it?
It should. Historically, as you take the wheat above the corn premium and you take away that feed grain status and you start shrinking world wheat supplies, and this is where the world wheat estimates are out for the crop report next week. 261 million tons of world wheat was shown for 17-18 last month. The average trade guess from Reuters is about 257. So we're already starting to see an idea that we're trimming the wheat stocks. That can't be anything, I don't think, anything better than or anything but beneficial to the corn given the last 3 years.
There's an old trade adage about the oats, and Alan Dearden likes to put this one out periodically, that oats knows, and they finish the day higher too.
Yeah, the oats, they are just a great thing to watch. It's just, they're kind of like the belly market. They do have a sense for demand and supply, but you don't know how much you can trust them because, let's look at the hog market. If you look at a chart and what cut has been driving hogs, it's really been the bellies. And it's, you got to wonder how much fat are people going to take at this price. But the key point, I think, going into next week is we need lower crop conditions before the report. I think that's an important step. We need to stay dry and we need to see the drought monitor. We're actually at 22% drought of any kind of stage of drought in the United States here continentally. That's still about 22% less than we were a year ago. So this drought fear could really get into the market's mindset in the next 10 days because of that critical pollination phase. And we would start to be looking at some pretty substantial declines that maybe we couldn't wipe away with one or two rains. So you think last week was important, and it was, but next week's even more critical to keep that momentum going higher.
And finally, a bit on the livestock. Cattle producers in Montana, North Dakota, I think, have been moving livestock out of those areas. And then should livestock producers think about pricing inputs?
I think I made the recommendation a week ago to get the rest of the, I did 6 months out until September. I wanted to do another 6 months out into the early part of next year. And so, yes, I think it's an important time to do it. And I was talking about diesel prices this week with clients as well that utilize this break in the crude oil and the natural gas and in the diesel, whatever you can get out of the futures market that translates into some cash price lows. I think this is a great place to start doing that for the fall diesel needs too.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Mike Zuzlow is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. On Friday, we always try to check the weather forecast from two or three different sources. Jim Angel left us a note earlier today.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. July has been warm, humid, with widely scattered rains. Temperatures have been about 1 degree above normal. Rainfall is highly variable in July, with one county getting 1 to 2 inches while the next county over having nothing. Over the past 30 days, an area of extreme dryness has developed in central Illinois between Fulton and Champaign counties, where rainfall is running 2 to 3 inches below normal. As a result of the below normal rainfall over the last 30 days, crops and vegetation have had to rely more heavily on soil moisture to grow. This is causing a rapid depletion of soil moisture in the top 8 inches. As those reserves are used up, roots will have to go deeper to tap into soil moisture at lower levels. And of course, corn and soybeans have much deeper root systems than lawn grass and can do fine even after the grass has turned brown. According to the National Weather Service, temperatures and humidity will moderate a little over the weekend after the cold front passes through on Friday. There will be chances of showers and thunderstorms every day this weekend and next week, with the largest potential rainfall amounts in northern Illinois. Temperatures over the weekend and next week are typical for this time of year, with highs ranging from the low 80s in the north to the upper 80s in the south. Overnight lows will be in the mid to upper 60s over the weekend and creep up into the low 70s next week. This is state climatologist Jim Angel.
We should have more on the weather forecast at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. In today's agricultural news, Amazon's new Prime membership discount for millions of Americans who have EBT cards is leading competitors to complain that the e-commerce giant might not really be playing by the rules as it positions to grab a share of the $70 billion food stamp program, or SNAP. The Department of Agriculture, for its part, contends that Amazon is not doing anything wrong, but brick-and-mortar grocers are quietly making a case to agency officials and lawmakers that the special deal on Prime, a program that provides rapid free shipping and other perks for a monthly fee, could violate a USDA rule mandating equal treatment for the 42 million participants in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP. Behind the scenes, retailers are asking officials to take another look at the longstanding guidelines for the SNAP program. Those rules are generally understood to mean that retailers can neither discriminate against recipients nor give them preferential treatment or special deals. From Washington, D.C., we'll head to Arkansas, where the state's Legislative Council is set to vote on whether to authorize a state plant board decision to put in place a 120-day ban on the pesticide dicamba. That move came after more than 500 complaints from farmers that drift from the chemical's use on neighboring fields was harming their crops. The state plant board on June 23rd passed emergency rules to ban dicamba, as well as increase fines to up to $25,000, and moved up the effective date for those fines. The herbicide is mainly sprayed on soybean and cotton fields to kill invasive pigweed. Let's go overseas now, where the political agreement announced between the European Union and Japan is a stark reminder that President Donald Trump's decision to abandon the Trans-Pacific Partnership doesn't mean a return to the status quo. Instead, it means that U.S. farmers, already reeling from declining incomes, could actually lose market share in vital economies, that according to a report from ProTrade's Adam Bashuto. Japan, the world's third largest economy, offered Brussels virtually the same trade package that would have boosted U.S. exports under TPP. Japan, the world's third largest economy, offered Brussels virtually the same trade package that would have boosted U.S. exports under TPP. On that note, we'll stay with trade. You know, there was a rare happening on the U.S. agricultural trade front this spring. Gary Crawford from USDA has more.
When you track monthly U.S. agricultural exports versus imports,
a monthly trade deficit for agricultural goods is pretty rare.
But it did happen during May. Agriculture Department analyst Bryce Cook says it was a very small deficit, $17 million, out of about $10.7 billion worth of exports and imports. Again, a deficit even for 1 month doesn't happen very often.
The last time that there was a trade deficit was actually May of last year. That one was a little bit larger at over $100 million.
But Cook says even with a tiny deficit this May, U.S. exports for the first 8 months of this fiscal year are at $98.9 billion, $12 billion more than the same time in 2016, or
14% more in percentage terms.
And the U.S. is still running an ag trade surplus of almost $19 billion. The latest forecast for the year calling for total exports at $137 billion with a trade surplus $22.5 billion. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And one more story for the afternoon. Farm leaders are giving mixed reviews to EPA's just proposed 2018 renewable fuel volume targets under the nation's Renewable Fuel Standard, otherwise known as the RFS. National Corn Growers President Wesley Spurlock says EPA's proposal to keep the so-called renewable volume obligation for conventional corn ethanol unchanged from this year is good for farmers and rural communities who dealt with the RFS uncertainty over the last 3 years.
This gives a lot of certainty to the ethanol industry when EPA brings their renewable volume obligations forward at statutory levels. Then that makes it to where everybody knows that we're going to continue to grow, we're going to continue to keep grinding corn, and that's the important part of this.
Others were less supportive. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley was disappointed EPA proposed no increase in biodiesel production, as well as cuts to advanced biofuels and cellulosic ethanol, cuts that he argues will have a chilling effect on investment in the next generation of biofuels. National Farmers Union President Roger Johnson read from a prepared statement that while the proposed volume for conventional ethanol meets the RFS statute, he says volumes proposed for advanced biofuels fail to meet President Trump's biofuels commitment to farmers.
But today's disappointing proposal, by lowering volume obligations for the next generation of biofuels, seems to back off those assurances. As family farmers navigate a severely depressed farm economy, this is a time the administration should be raising expectations for a policy that drives many economies in rural America.
Johnson says the EPA proposal will ultimately fall nearly 7 billion gallons short of levels Congress prescribed, and urged EPA to reconsider the cuts when it finalizes a rule by November the 30th. The Renewable Fuels Association also expressed concern about the lower volume target for cellulosic ethanol, but praised that for conventional ethanol, saying it will help drive investment in facilities to accommodate higher ethanol blends. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is here now. He's from Agribull right here in Champaign County. Hey, Eric, thanks so much for being with us. Let's look back at the rainfall we've gotten over the last week, and then maybe you can tell us what that means and how it turns into the forecast coming through the future.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've been looking a lot at is who's been getting the rain and who's not been getting the rain over the last 30 days or so. And there's a few pockets that are kind of stressed, one of which is right here in central Illinois. We've had, you know, when you look over the last 30 days, where some of the locations around here are at about half to maybe 60 to 75% normal of rainfall. And the problem is we've been going long stretches without getting any. So that's really the big issue. You know, you'll do fine if you're at 75% normal rainfall, as long as the rain's coming regularly. The corn can handle that. But we have these big, long stretches, we're in trouble. So that's why, you know, the thunderstorms that came through parts of Illinois, parts of Missouri, and now today they're going across Indiana and Ohio, possibly kicking up some more severe conditions, have been so, you know, beneficial at this time of year. But what's interesting is I got a chance to do quite a bit of driving around the Corn Belt the last week or so. And, you know, pollination is not going to be very even this year. And I think a lot of folks in Illinois are going to be pollinating in maybe week 3, week 4 of July. So that's what gets us really talking about the position of that ridge out west. And it's that ridge that I'm really keeping a close eye on, because right now, yeah, it's set up out west. Most of the heat stays out west. The 90 degree plus weather is stretching from Texas to the Dakotas. And the east has been kind of occupied by a rather broad trough. Now, over the next, let's call it 10 days, there will be some time periods where that ridge kind of advects or moves to the east. And it'll bring in some days where we'll get up into the 90s here in central Illinois. But the good thing is that the long-range model forecasts are kind of doing their best to convince me that that ridge is going to stay west for most of July. And that's a really good thing. We're still going to get up in the way up upper 80s and some lower 90s days, but none of this stretches of, you know, 97, 99, 101 kind of temperatures, which is going to be good given how, you know, vulnerable the crop is. Here's the other good news about that. With that ridge out west, we get what's called northwest flow. And we've talked about this a lot on your show. And in a nutshell, northwest flow brings in these little bands of vorticity. Now, I know a lot of our listeners probably don't ever use the word vorticity, but that can actually excite the development of thunderstorms. And as those, each of these little waves kind of comes down the northwest side of that ridge, from the northwest down the side of that ridge, we get chances for showers and storms. Now, just like the last few days, it's going to be hit or miss. Some folks are going to get it and some folks are not. But we talk about this crucial time period here in July with pollination kind of on our doorstep. You know, this is summer weather, and this is what we got to be forecasting.
Hey, thanks so much. Anything else to add before I let you go?
You know, I'll tell you this. I've been kind of keeping a close eye overseas, and over the last couple of weeks, I haven't really seen too much relief in the hotter and drier conditions that have kind of hit parts of Ukraine and northeastern China, and plus central China right now is having some major problems with flooding in the Yangtze River. So there's some overseas pressures that may make U.S. markets more favorable. But, you know, in terms of weather, those are the big things that I'm seeing.
Eric Snodgrass is from Agrible. If you can stay with us here at Illinois Public Media, coming up next, Commodity Week. If not, no worries. You can pick it up at willag.org in about an hour or so. Our panelists this week include Jerry Golke of the Golke Group and Dan Zwicker of Zwicker Consulting.